maybe some of the old timers shall remember. So I spoke about pasul bar kisne. I'm not going to talk about that today. I don't remember. So I gave a whole shiur about pizza and pasul bar kisne and cakes. And then they went in and they served pizza for supper that night. So I had 100 guys in yeshiva. How can we chat? What brought them making the pizza? So tonight I thought I would talk about something else, and hopefully it won't be relevant in dinner tonight. I was talking a little bit about bishalakum. So the odds that we're going to have a bishalakum shalat tonight in Shalvim is highly unlikely. But the shalos of bishalakum, the fact that the Mishnah tells us in the Sefer Avodah Zarah that even if the ingredients in food is kosher, but it's cooked by a non-Jew, so the food for practical purposes is considered to be not kosher, this dinner bishalakum is very, very relevant, a little bit less relevant than Eretz Yisrael, but it's very relevant outside of Eretz Yisrael, and some of you may have had bishalakum shalos in your own homes. I would say that, you know, traditionally a Rav usually learns the halachas of kasher meat, and shchita, and treifas, things like that. So I have yet to have any shalos in Chashchita, and yet to have any shalos in Chashchita, and yet to have any shalos in Chashmalicha, but I've had many hundreds of shalos, without exaggeration, in terms of Chashchita Bishalakum, partially because a lot of people have non-Jews working in their houses, so that, of course, creates a serious Bishalakum shalos, as well as in restaurants and catering establishments and cafeterias. So one of the most common problems is the issue of the Bishalakum. So I thought we would just familiarize ourselves a little bit with the background of these halachas and see how this plays out. Lamaisa, what are the dinim, what are the conditions that if a non-Jew cooks food it is problematic, and on what considerations could we possibly have which would in fact be permissible. So let's get a little bit of background, learn through a little bit of the Sugya Bishalakum. So the Sugya begins in the second parak of the Sefer Avodah Zarah. But the Mishnah says that one is not permitted to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew. Even though the Gemara at one stage thinks that this may be a din d'oraisa, this is quickly rejected, and it's clear from the Gemara that this is only prohibited mid-rabbanan. Why exactly is this also mid-rabbanan? There's nothing as Rashi in Tosfos. Rashi, in one place at least, writes that it's a gezeira mishum kashrus. So we're afraid that if the non-Jew is going to be cooking food for you, we're afraid that he may throw in some treif for food. Even though right now we know that the food is kosher, we have Mashiach who's watching him, we don't see any treifas going on. But mid-rabbanan, we're concerned that if we're lax and we let the non-Jew cook for us, next thing you know, he may in fact add in non-kosher food. So this day in Rashi is not the popular opinion. Most of the poskim assume like the opinion of Tosfos. Tosfos says this has nothing to do with what this kasher is proper. Rather, the reason why bishalakum is prohibited is the gezeira mishum chasmus. So we're afraid that if we let you eat the food cooked by the non-Jews, so we know that food gets people together, people become more friendly, tazi-bazi over food, so the non-Jew is going to invite you over to his house, and then he may want you to marry his daughter. A lot of problems. So intermarriage is the gezeira mishum chasmus. The nip the problem in the bar, therefore the problem prohibited bishalakum. So the chag is Rashi and Tosfos. Now, halacha, we generally assume like Shittas Tosfos. There may be some nachkaminas of dina, but we're not going to talk about them that much. We're going to focus most of the shiur on Shittas Tosfos. But the reason for bishalakum is also is the gezeira mishum chasmus. If this is the case, then there may be certain kulas, maybe certain heterim, maybe certain situations arise where the gezeira mishum chasmus isn't prevalent, and maybe the issur bishalakum wouldn't apply. Tosfos in the second of the Nezara quotes such a possibility in the name of one of the Balei of Tosfos, that maybe the whole issur bishalakum only applies in a base akam, only applies in a non-Jew's house. But if it's a Jew's house, a Jew's hotel, a Jew's restaurant, then maybe the entire issur of bishalakum wouldn't apply. And again, the reason makes a lot of sense. That if I'm being invited by the non-Jew, I'm having making a social meeting with him, and he's trying to impress me with his good food, and he's going to try to marry me off to his daughter. So that makes sense, because they're Mishum Chasas. But if the non-Jew is coming to my house, maybe the whole Hashash, maybe the whole Fiat Chasas doesn't really apply. So even though it sounds like an interesting svar, Tosfos immediately rejects it. Tosfos quotes the name of Rabbeinu Tam. That's not true. That the gezeira of chasmus was across the board, even if it's in a base Yisrael. If the halacha would not have been like Rabbeinu Tam, if he would have accepted the halacha the first day, then basically the shiur would have been over, because there are no shalos anymore. Base akam, who's going to eat by the non-Jewish neighbor? That's ridiculous. All of our bishalakum shalos are in Jewish homes, and Jewish restaurants, Jewish catering establishments, Jewish shul kitchens. So if that's the case, then we would have very, very little to talk about. So the good news, the bad news, depending on whether you want to be the shiur now. So the bottom line is that we assume that bishalakum does apply in the basis throughout. The second kula that is suggested by some Rishon, the Ramban has such an idea, the Rishon has such an idea, that maybe bishalakum only applies when it's in a social setting. When you're having two people, a Jew and a non-Jew, eating together, they're friends, then we have a fear of gezeira mishum chasmus. What if we have a situation where it's in more of an employer-employee type of relationship? Maybe you can argue that the whole concept of bishalakum really wouldn't make any sense under those circumstances. So what if you have, what some Rishon use the term avodah mishvachos, other Rishon say it's not dafka, avodah mishvachos, Rather, it means someone's working for you. So if I have an employee, I hire a non-Jewish cook. I'm hiring somebody who's a babysitter who's working in my house, and they go ahead and they cook food for me. So should Bishalacham apply? So there's one opinion of Rishon that says it doesn't apply because it's not a social setting, it's a work relationship, and therefore there's no fear of Mishim Chasna. So the good news or the bad news, depending on your perspective again, is that we don't pass like this either. The halach, we don't accept this kula. We assume the official halacha applies even if it's a babysitter, if it's a maid, even if it's a chef, or an employee, it doesn't make a difference. There's no law pulled across the board, we assume the official halacha is a problem. Again, if either one of these two kula would have been accepted, we would have been home free, there would have been very, very little shayos lamais of official halacha. Since we basically categorically reject both of them, therefore, we assume the halacha that bishalachim is a very real problem in our establishments, even though the people who are doing the cooking are our employees. So now that we've rejected the two kulas, let's see if we can find some kulas that actually do work. Those who know the shiur from the past, we don't want to end up with all the chumras, maybe a little kula here and there. So do we have any kulas whatsoever in the realm of bishalachim? So there is one possible kula that already the Gemara speaks about. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Avodah Zarah that if a person cooks food, if a goy cooks food, a non-Jew cooks food for us, that the food would have been edible without the non-Jews cooking, which is called nechel kemo shiuchai. Let's say, for example, carrots. So people eat raw carrots. So they cook carrots. Well, let's say apples. People eat raw apples. People eat baked apples. So what's the din? Is it subject to the din of bishalachim or not? So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says the bishalachim would not be a problem if it's something which is nechel kemo shiuchai. Why should that be so? So there appears to be a machlekes harishon. Rashi says, because that's not considered to be bishal in kol ha-tarakula. Rashi says bishal is defined in the world of halacha as taking an inedible food, applying heat to it, and making it into edible. If it was edible beforehand, that's not considered to be a nice bishal. You get the impression from Rashi that that would be true in Ruchos Shabbos as well. If I cooked a raw carrot on Shabbos, so that wouldn't be a deraisa according to Rashi. If I baked an apple, that wouldn't be a deraisa according to Rashi. So others say that's not the reason why it's mutter in bishalachim. Others say it's not a din klali, it's not a generalized halacha at all of bishal. Rather, it's a local halacha which is unique to bishalachim, because since bishalachim is based on chasnos, we're afraid that the person is going to come and marry the goy's daughter. So that makes sense that the goy cooks up for me a steak. So a steak, I couldn't eat it beforehand. I come to the non-Jew, he cooks me up a delicious steak. Wow, I thank him, of course, I don't give him a big hug and a kiss, I'm excited, and I go ahead and I marry his daughter. But in any case, if I come to the non-Jew's house and he cooks me up raw carrots, and he turns me into cooked carrots, so I say to myself, for this I need a father-in-law, I need a father-in-law to make me cook carrots. I could have eaten the carrots in the raw anyway, so what do I have to marry to such a family? So comes some poskim and say, it's a unique halach, it's a localized din, and we're not really concerned with chasnos, because there's nothing really to get too excited about if the food could have been nechal kemo shiuchai as well. So whatever the reason is, that's the din. The Gemara says, befeirush, that's what we pass in Shulchan Aruch, that whatever was edible raw is not subject to bishalachim. That term, edible raw, nechal kemo shiuchai, becomes a very, very tricky term, because that lechora has to be defined based on the time and place. So in different places, in different times, nechal kemo shiuchai is going to change. I'll give you just one example, one very popular example of Bizman Hazet. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that any food that's raw, it's not edible on Shabbos, is by definition considered to be mukta. So the Gemara says, what's considered to be inedible food, something that nobody ever in a million years would ever eat raw? The Gemara says, Yimamish Meshuggah to eat this raw, because it's fish. Because it's fish, what Meshuggah would ever eat raw fish? Honestly, because I don't want to see those funny guys in the web. Truth is, I happen to like sushi a lot, but I really like the sauce better than sushi. It's just that I can't go to a wedding and start drinking the soy sauce. I have to pinch it in order to have the sauce. And my wife lets me eat the sushi at the weddings because she thinks it's healthier than all the other garbage at the Shmuley Sports. So, back to the story. That was on why you heard that comment. Okay, good. It's edited afterwards. So comes the Gemara and says, no Meshuggah would ever eat raw fish, and therefore raw fish is considered to be mukta. In contrast, the Gemara says that raw meat, what's the matter with raw meat? Every once in a while, a person nashes on a raw hot dog and hamburger, and maybe the last thing they nash on, they live past that point. So some E. coli bacteria never made it to the place of Chazal. So the Gemara said that raw fish is crazy to eat, and raw meat is not so crazy. Therefore, nuchas mukta. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, what says the fish in Shulchan Aruch, raw fish is mukta, and raw meat is not mukta. So in the modern day, mukta svar points out that if anything, the exact opposite is true. That this changed according to the common place. But modern day, no Meshuggah would ever eat raw meat. You only have more fish, a lot of people eat. So l'chari, that should also be true when it comes to bishalachim. And of course there's bishalachim on meat, this man is there. It's not a question, nobody eats raw meat today. But raw fish, maybe one could argue, would not be subject to the dinim of bishalachim. So this may depend on what type of fish we're talking about. Not all fish can be made into sushi. So again, I'm not a big mumtah on sushi, but people have told me that certain fish are suitable to make into sushi and other fish is not. But those kinds of fish that can be made into sushi, l'chari, one could argue, would not be subject to the dinim of bishalach. Somebody mentioned to me that there were some who were concerned about invoking the school of Bisman Hazeh because they thought that sushi, that's not normal, that's crazy. That's not crazy. Why is that crazy? He said it's a multi-billion dollar industry today, so Mayhem says that's full crazy. So l'chari, any fish that can be turned into sushi, pashas, would not be subject to bishalach. What about other kinds of foods which are not normally edible in a raw state? Let's say, for example, pasta, things like that. So l'chari, those would be subject to the dinim of bishalach. Remember, many years ago, I used to teach l'chari Shabbos here in Stern College. So I once was doing the dinim of muktzah, so I mentioned that some foods are muktzah, some foods are not muktzah, depending whether they're edible or not. So I mentioned that pasta, that's an example of something that is muktzah mamish. So you have to be careful in your closet. Sometimes you have a box of pasta next to some other food, and you want to move the pasta box out of the way. That's a problem on Shabbos, because something that's muktzah mamish cannot be moved even with tzarech makomo. If I have, let's say, a pencil on the table, and I want to move the pencil away, put my Shabbos table, put my plate down, that's okay. That's called the kli shemalach al yisrael, the tzarech makomo is mutter. But something which is itself muktzah, something which has no use whatsoever, is considered to be at a higher level of muktzah than a pencil, and you cannot move it at all. So you have to be careful in your closet. Be careful you don't have anything that's mamish muktzah. Say in the freezer, sometimes people have raw meat or something in the freezer. So you have to be careful not to position in such a way that you can't get the ice cream or whatever else you want in the freezer. So I said this in Stern that pasta, I think, is an example of something that's a double portion is considered to be muktzah mamish. For our purposes, it's something that would for sure be subject to the dinner of bishalachim. So there was one girl in the back who was very, very timid, but she raised her hand and she said, she just wants me to know that she sometimes during finals when people get very nervous, I don't want to discourage them from coming to IU, people get very nervous and there's a lot of pressure, so she sometimes tends to munch on pasta when it's raw. So I said, okay. I said, but Lodaita ate some pasta lot. I didn't say that because that was, I didn't want to insult her. But then I just asked for a show of hands, who here would every once in a while eat raw pasta? So it was a class of about 50 girls, about 30 hands went up. So that was fascinating. I told this over in YU, another time when I was saying a shiur in the Shabbos or something, I said this over, and all the guys in the yeshiva, he basically gave the same reaction as you guys did. They all started to laugh and make funny faces. So I said that they shouldn't laugh too much, because I said, based on the statistics, I said probably 95% of you will be married to one of those girls at some point. So you better be used to know what's coming. I said, same thing to you guys, you don't know who's around the corner. Okay, anyway. So the bottom line is we have a kula. We have at least one kula. That's the kula of Nava Shenech Moshe Chai. Then the Gemara says there's another possible kula for Bishalach. That's something which is Eina Ola Shulchan Malachim. Something which wouldn't be served at a fancy meal. And again, we can understand that kula makes a lot of sense to us. Because the whole idea is that Shirin means Bechasnas. So if the non-Jew comes over and he cooks me a das steak, so I'm very appreciative. Well, this is a really fancy meal. But the non-Jew comes and he cooks me up something which is such a shvach kind of a food, something that even though it's not edible raw, but no one would ever serve this at a fancy meal, so I don't consider this to be so honorable, and it's not worth it for me to get involved with them socially, and therefore the Ogzeh Mishim Chasnas doesn't apply. But this principle of Eina Ola Shulchan Malachim, also the Chorah is going to depend on the bottom place. How do you define who's considered to be the Malachim for these purposes? I'm just supposed to write. But that would be served at like a state dinner or something, so not a fancy meal, that's considered to be Ola Shulchan Malachim. So we don't exactly know what's served where. So we assume whatever would be served at a wedding or something, that's considered to be an Ola Shulchan Malachim pasta. Some pastas can be served at a wedding. You have the shayla of pasta very often. It's probably the most common shayla of bishalachim they have in our communities back in America. Why? Because inevitably the following happens. That the non-Jewish babysitter is watching the kids, the mother's supposed to be home to make supper, and she gets stuck at work or something, and the husband's nowhere to be found. And the kids are screaming, and usually describe basically what happens in my house. Actually, probably what's happening in my house is probably the case. Hopefully it's 12 o'clock now in New York. Probably that's not happening, but by 10 to 7 in my house, New York time, New Jersey time, Bergenfield time, that's probably what's happening. So I'm clearly at home. I don't know where my wife is going to be, and the kids are hungry, so that's usually what happens. So now, Baruch Hashem, my kids have gotten a little advanced, because my kids know what to do whenever they get hungry, so they just dial chopsticks. and the order. Not only do they all style chopsticks, but they even give my credit card number. My kids are only 9 and 12. It's a new world out there. Anyway, some of the NCSY people can attest to the fact that the kids know how to huddle, right? They can't take care of themselves. Okay, anyway. But in the old, in the free digadiris, when someone actually cooked them food, so very often the non-Jewish babysitter would start with throw up some pasta. That's the fastest food to cook. So shah's out of problem. So shah le bishalachim. So assuming the pasta is not edible for normal people, so that's... that would be a problem, but is the pasta olah shulchan malachim? Would you serve pasta at a wedding? So I thought it depends. I've had the shalom many times. I think it depends if it's a lom d'shavot, it's a brisket Torah, there are two different pasta, there are two kinds of pastas. But some pastas that are nice pasta, nice fancy, schmancy, you know, roll pasta, you would serve that at a shmogus blood. People wouldn't hesitate to serve that at a shmogus blood as a pasta salads or something. You see that at fancy meals. However, we call it the elbow macaroni, so it'd be, you wouldn't see at the marina, you probably wouldn't see elbow macaroni served, the macaroni and cheese, hopefully that's the cheese part, macaroni and ketchup or something. I don't know, it's not really a high, fancy food. So they have a thing, yesh makom lahakol on that. So again, you have to go case by case, food by food, to see whether it's the type of food that's Allah shukur
Allah. Make a difference that they're really the same thing, they just have to be shaped in different forms.
Yeah, I think that...
A lot of times it's the same meal pasta you eat at home, but the sauces and the accompanying vegetables are what make it into a chashava. There are certain pastas that are just more chashava pastas, but... A lot of times it's the same spaghetti, just
as a fancy sauce. Yeah, I'm concerned about the spaghetti. I'm not so sure that spaghetti would be okay. But I think there's something about the elbow macaroni. I've yet to see that at a... I've seen it some Hamish Kiddushes, but some mayonnaise thrown out. I haven't really seen it at a fancy weddings. I don't know. Still willing to make one now. You have another common child, a very common example. Another thing that always gets cooked up by the babysitter at the last minute is fish sticks. So a fish stick is considered to be a problem of Allah Shukh Malach, assuming that they weren't cooked before. And if they were cooked before and they're just being reheated, that would be okay. So you have to find out different companies may make them different. But let's say even worst case scenario, they weren't cooked yet. So the non-Jew throws in the fish sticks for you. We serve fish sticks at a wedding? Probably not. But fish is served at a wedding. So what was that? A fish is served at a wedding. You go boss on that food, so fish in this particular tzur, this particular steak, is not considered to be served at a wedding. This one presumably wouldn't be a problem. And Allah Shukh Malachim is an important kula to be aware of. This kula of Ain Allah Shukh Malachim becomes also important when we talk about the canned foods and your mass manufactured foods. Is that a problem of bishalachim? So this is a big machlok to the different hashgacha organizations. So there are some poskim who say that anything that's canned is by definition not a problem. You know, it's the same food, but they would never serve this. Imagine at the White House, assuming the state dinner. Imagine they run out of some fancy tuna fish and say, no problem, just open up a can of a starkist. That wouldn't happen like that. They don't serve canned foods at the White House. They don't serve canned vegetables. Nobody serves everything has to be fresh. So maybe one can argue that all canned foods, by definition, is considered to be Eina Olo Shulchan Malachim. So others are not so convinced that that's true. So there are other tzad of mahakam when it comes to canned foods. And Ramosha had a suggestion. Ramosha suggested that maybe anything that's so mass manufactured in the factory in such a way that you would never ever meet the person who ever made the food. It would be impossible. What are you afraid of? You're going to go to, where do they make the tuna fish? I think it's in Puerto Rico. So you're going to go to Puerto Rico and you're going to go find the person who cooked up the canned food inside the kitchen. That's Shia. So maybe that the whole gazera doesn't apply. So there's some who have such a svar. Then there are other svars will help about canned foods. That usually the way the food is cooked in the cans, it's not cooked in a fire. It's not cooked. They don't take tuna fish, put it into a can, and then put the can into the fire. The whole thing will blow up. It was called steam cooking. It's a different way of cooking, a whole totally different way of steaming cooking. Maybe that's not considered to be included in the shalachim opium. So there's a lot of different stuff why there probably is no problem with the shalachim on canned food. But the minigin, many of the ashkachas in America is, so the OU gives ashkach on tuna fish, so they're not telling you that the tuna fish is cooked by a Jew. The tuna fish is cooked by a guy. But it doesn't bother them because it's ain't a osho from a lachim, the canned tuna fish, or it's not really visual, or it's so far removed. So for a variety of reasons, the minigin, many of the ashkachas to be making those certain organizations, they didn't want to rely on this kula, they insist on Bishul Yisrael even on the cans. Some of you may have seen on some Hamish brands of tuna fish will say in big bold letters Bishul Yisrael. So I mean somebody with a long white beard is actually hopefully somewhere in Puerto Rico cooking up the tuna fish. That's at least what's supposed to be happening. I say what is happening, that's what's in theory supposed to be happening. But again, the others will make the one that's on Mahakil is the fact that the Eina Ola Shulchan Malachim. Again, so this is an important kula. This is a very helpful kula to be aware of. This kula of Eina Ola Shulchan Malachim. Here's another example where we probably rely on this kula without even realizing it. And that's an issue that the Boskim raised about donuts, whether donuts are considered to be a problem of Bishal Acham or not. Why should donuts be a problem of Bishal Acham? The Chorah donuts should be another problem, should be a problem of Pas Acham. The Mishnah says in Masechet Avodah Zarah that Chazal asked that eating bread that was baked by a non-Jew as well, for the same reason, Mishum Chasnas. The good news is that they lifted that Gezer for the most part. Yerushalmi says that because it was so difficult for people to get Jewish bread, so basically Chazal said you're allowed to eat Pas Acham. We have a minhag during the Sefer Tshuva to be extra specially careful, so we observe the dinner Pas Acham. So you're basically allowed to eat Goyish bread as long as it was made by what's called a palter, as long as it was made by a professional baker, and then the fear of Chasnas was a little bit less, so therefore when it came to Bishul Acham, professionals, doesn't make a difference. When it comes to Pas Acham, Chazal were more willing to be makel and a palter, and therefore that's what we do today. So anyone who buys a regular Freihoppers bread or something in the store, so that's considered to be Pas Acham, but it's Pas Acham, it's Mutter, which one should try to avoid during this Erev Shemei Tshuva. So there is a machlekes today as a Tosfos, where do cakes and cookies fit into the picture? Are cakes and cookies considered to be Pas, because they're in the Pas family, going back to the Pas of the Kisnei Shirev from a couple of years ago? Or do we say no, they're considered to be Bishul, since you don't really make a motzi and you don't to wash and mention them, so therefore they're not considered to be Pas, they're considered to be Bishul. That's the big machlokes that we showed him. So according to the Machmir and that Shaila, that cookies and cakes are considered to be Bishul Atom, so that bad news for you, all of Entermin's a tray, and all of Fryav, everything is tray, everything that's made by only bread mamish is kosher, but all kinds of non-Jewish companies that make any cookies and cakes, everything is mamish tray gomer. So that's the bad news. The good news is that we don't pass them. We passed it the other day in Tyson and Mekel, that breads and cakes are still considered to be close enough to the bread family. And the reason being, the Ramah says, is that if you would eat enough cookies and cakes, you would have to wash and mention them. So they're considered to be in the category of pas, not bishul. And they're included in the kula, if Yerushalmi says, that Chazal would make you, that they would mat pas palpas. So Baruch Hashem, we could read easily, that one is permitted to eat cookies and cakes made by non-Jews, as long as they're professional non-Jews, we're not concerned with the issue of pas apo, we're not concerned with the issue of bishul apo. However, the post can point out that donuts are not that way, because donuts, say deep fried donuts, so they're not baked, they're deep fried. So deep fried is mamish like cooking. So donuts should be mamish bishul. So the chara donuts should not be trade. That's the din. That all the that's the final thing. So that's the chara the din should be. That all the Dunkin' donuts should be trade. All the jelly donuts, all the custard, everything should be mamish trade for more because it's bishulach. That's the chara what the din should be. So here the post is made. Why they made though? Because donuts are not oil shulchan alachim. We usually don't see donuts at a fancy meal. You have a Viennese table after chassid, you're not going to see donuts, steaks, a lot of other cookies and cakes, a lot of chazarai, but you're not going to see donuts. Donuts are generally a cheaper kind of a food. As we all know, who eats donuts? Two kinds of people eat donuts. Cops and truck drivers, right? So what's the common denominator between a cop and a truck driver? They're always on the move. So they're not shulchan alachim. They're always eating. They're eating their car. They're eating their truck. That's the type of food that a donut is. And therefore, we have a right to make it. Baruch Hashem, we just save donuts for us. Okay, so donuts are mutter. The macaroni, the cheapy macaroni is mutter. We have a few coolers. But again, these are the second consideration. That Allah shulchan alachim. So those are the two questions you have to always ask yourself. When a pas getting a bishul alachim, shaloh. Is it Nechak Moshuchai, and is it Ola Shulchan Alochem? Then the Gemara has another important clue for us in terms of Bishul Acham, and that's the fact that the Bishul has to be done entirely by the Jew. If the Goy participates in the... it has to be done entirely by the Goy. If the Jew participates in any stage of the Bishul process, so that's enough for recognition, that's enough for Heker, and therefore the whole list of Bishul Acham does look like. What would that mean, the Jew participating? So the Gemara gives you some examples. What's considered to be a Jew participating? Let's say the Jew stirs the pot a little bit when it's on the fire, or the Jew puts the food onto the fire, whatever it is, even though the Goy is doing most of the work, that's considered to be Bishul Yisrael, not Bishul Acham. So there is an important machlokes that we've shown him. What if the Jew isn't participating in the actual cooking process, but the Jew is participating in some of the preparatory processes? Namely, he's lit the fire. So the Jew lights the fire, and then he goes to this man, sits and learns, and the guy comes and takes the raw steak and puts it on the fire and stirs the food and prepares the whole thing. But the Jew lit the fire an hour ago. Is that considered to be Bishul Akam, or is that considered to be Bishul Yisrael? That's a big machlokes that we've shown him. Machlokes the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah Halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Svari Rishonim who are machmir on that, we'll consider that to be Bishul Akva Mamash. It's only called Bishul Yisrael if the Jew participates in the actual cooking proper, whereas there are more called the Ashkenazi Rishonim who are more makel on this, more lenient, but even that's considered to be Bishul Yisrael. That's what that minig is. In America, everybody's makel on that Shaila. We assume that that's considered to be Bishul Yisrael, but that's because the Jew lit the fire. That's what we do in all of our restaurants and all of our hotels. We have the Jew light the pilot, turns on the fire, as the Mashkiach comes 4 o'clock in the morning, turns on the fire, then he goes, does whatever he has to do, and the goy cooks the whole day based on that. So that's a big problem. So how could Sfarim eat in any of the places in America? So all the hotels and all the restaurants and all the prominent tashkafas all rely on this kula. So is it shy for Sfarim to eat there? So Rabbi Avadya Yosef writes in the tshuva that maybe Sfarim could be makel based on a tzveit fake. Why? Because there is one day in Rishonim, as we said before, that says that Bishalakam doesn't apply in a basis of Israel, even though we don't generally pass it like that, maybe it's a safek. So Ravadji writes, those Sfarim who are eating in our homes, in our catering establishments, and our restaurants, they're relying on the safek fake to that. Number one, safek echad maybe doesn't apply in a basis of Israel. And even if Mamre does, he says, maybe there's a chance, a safek, maybe Ashkenazim are right. Maybe that the Ramah is right. Maybe it's a safek, they snake a lanapka. So maybe the Ramah is right, that as long as the Jews start the fire, that would be good enough. So Ravadji concludes that the Shuv, it's not really right. The Sfarim really shouldn't rely on this school, but those who do, you can't fight with them. So we had this issue a couple of years ago. More than a couple of years ago, already, but why you started their meal plan. So I don't know if I'm supposed to say this as an official representative of YU, so this is not, it's off the record, but I'll tell the story anyway. So years ago, when YU started their mandatory meal plan, so some of the Sfardi boys approached the administration and said that it's not fair because they're not allowed to eat the food in the cafeteria because it's straight according to Shulchan Aruch, because it's all the food is cooked by Goyim. And it's under the OU, but the OU relies on the cool of the Ramah that they have the Jew lights the fire. So at the time, it's not fair to make us pay whatever it is, $15, I don't know whatever it was. It's not fair to make us pay. We're not allowed to eat the food anymore. We have to pay just to buy sodas the whole day. We can't buy any of the cooked foods here. So it was an interesting aura. So I don't know what the, I think if you could prove they're inspired, I think they gave up the meal plan or something. So some of the other guys in Shiva got some obvious thing, but we're brisket, so we don't eat the chadash. So 6 months a year we can't eat in the cafeteria. So everyone thought that the only way to get out of the meal plan was take a chumrah, so find the sheet that you can eat a whole month. Then you must have found the same people eating in the pizza store. Which it's not America. So I don't know what the policy is now, but the bottom line is that most of our places do rely on this kula. And of all the things that go wrong in Hashkar, this is one of the most common things that goes wrong, is that I remember I was once at a certain place that was under a very good hashkafa. This would never happen in one of our establishments, but it happened. But it happened once in another establishment, very reputable hashkafa, that the non-Jew was flipping the burgers or something, and the fire went out. And nobody took a match, and he lit the fire. And he started over again. So all the burgers that were cooked from that point on was shreif gomer. Because unless you want to rely on the kula of Beis Yisrael or the Avodah Meshlachos, but we don't rely on those kulas, and that was a problem. So you have to be careful that any good hashgacha tells all the workers that under no circumstance are they ever allowed to come on the fire. Because all the turning on the fire must be done by the Mashgiach or by somebody Jewish who's working in the establishment. Any reputable hashgacha will have that sign printed by the oven or by the stove that under no circumstances can any of the workers turn on the fire. And any good hashgach will have that song written in multiple languages. Otherwise, it's a bracha batala to write the language, the song in English.
Do you think all the quotes are being active?
No, anyway.
So why is the burger considered to be
the burger? Burger? Yeah, they serve it at Shmuel's place. They're usually as a burger station now. Where was I? What's today? Tuesday? The most traveling was Sunday night, right before I came, I had to go to a dinner for my kids at school. So one of the stations was they were flipping burgers. That's okay. Oh, we'll show you a pretty big meal at that dinner. There is another possible kula when we speak about Bishul Akam, is that Bishul Akam only applies when the food is actually cooked to the fire. If the food isn't cooked with fire, well, it may be prepared in other ways and say, we can discuss if the food is salted, is pickled, things of that nature. That's not considered to be Bishul Akam. So the question is, what if it's cooked? Is that actually cooked with a fire? Is that actually cooked with a flame? Is that considered to be Bishul Akam? So what would the law be about microwaves? If you take raw food, it was already cooked beforehand, that's not Bishul Akam. But if you take raw food and you put it into the microwave and you quote unquote cook it up, if a guy does that, is that considered to be Bishul Akam or not? So there is a big machlokes at poskim in the last generation, even Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Rohrbach, about the status of microwave cooking in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. Rav Moshe says that cooking in a microwave on Shabbos would be a deraisa of bishul, even though the Gemara says in the Sefer Shabbos in the third parak that cooking in the sun, when you don't know cooking the flame, cooking in the sun is not considered to be a bishul b'deraisa. Rav Moshe says, if you look at that sugi, it would appear the reason is because it's shalosh derech. That's the abnormal way of cooking, which would indicate that if it is the normal way of cooking, then it would be deraisa. So he says, Rav Moshe, you don't really need a flame in order to be cooking. Any normal way of cooking, we have the oil in that kind of place, considered to be a normal way of cooking. You have raw food, it becomes cooked food, so that's considered to be bishul. The Moshe writes, different microwaves are considered to be bishul deraisa. The Moshe writes, this is true, but years ago, when microwaves were not really so common, so the Moshe writes that he thinks that as the years go on, people are going to start using microwaves, which he was right. It doesn't take that much to figure out if he's going to be right in that people are lazy, so microwaves are easy. So he writes that when the time will come and people will start to cook normally in microwaves, then bishul in the microwave will be their rice, thick, and dinner bishul. So according to Rav Moshe, if it's called bishul in Hilchos Shabbos, the stuff is called bishul in Hilchos Bishul Akam as well. Rav Shlomo Zalman disagrees. Rav Shlomo Zalman claims, based on other ayahs, that bishul in the sun is not considered to be bishul because there's no ash, there's no flame. Whenever there's no flame, in definition, it's not considered to be bishul. According to the Svar of Shlomo Zalman, then l'chor, the same should be true when it comes to bishul akum. The bishul akum and akum should be mamish heter gomor. That's what l'chor the din should be. The only problem is that Shlomo Zalman apparently said otherwise. That at least there are pair. There are people who claim they asked for Shlomo Zalman, and he himself said that there is a problem with bishul akum on microwaves. It's hard for us exactly to understand why that should be so, but that's what Shlomo Zalman seemed to say. But others disagree. Others say that the topic is still bishul akum on microwaves. There are different opinions today. For those who are willing to be making on the bishul akum on microwave shah, that would be a really good kula. So you tell the non-Jew, if you want to cook up food for me, so just cook up the pasta and the fish sticks, whatever you're going to cook it over the microwave, and that would circumvent the whole problem. But there are many folks who will disagree with this. That was a big issue in Dunkin' Donuts over the years. The Dunkin' Donuts we already salvaged by telling us that it's in oil shul malacha. It used to be an issue of the non-Jews making eggs. The non-Jews going to make an omelette and other things. Whatever the non-Jews going to make in Dunkin' Donuts, so there was a shaila whether that's a problem or not. Can the non-Jew put it into the microwave and make the egg dish for you? Is that a problem with the shalachim? So there were different psalms with different Dunkin' Donuts in around the metropolitan New York area. So anyone here from the five towns? Okay, that was a pretty good chance someone would be from five towns. So the five towns, the Dunkin' Donuts in the five towns? Yeah. Right? So do they make eggs there?
Yeah.
Do they still have a sign that says you have to turn on the microwave yourself? Okay, so years ago, I'll tell you why they put the sign down. So years ago, there used to be a sign that said that anyone who wants eggs should turn on the microwave themselves. Because of Chashash and Bishul Akum. Anyone here from Tinek? not even, okay? So in Tinek, the Dunkin' Donuts of Tinek used to not have that sign. Why? Because they assumed that that's not a problem. It's not a problem with Bishul Akum. Now, what's happened over the years is that there's probably no problem with Bishul Akum. They live in the five towns, they live in Tinek, because of some good news or some bad news, depending on how much they like eggs. Apparently, the eggs that they use are not real eggs, that they're pre-eggs or something. You're not sure what it is, yeah. Not real eggs, yeah. Anyway, so whatever it is, it's not a problem with Bishul Akum. Okay, whatever it is, it may not be royal lechina, but it's not a problem with Bishul Akum. We mentioned before.
Doesn't it matter that no one would microwave something at a fancy dinner?
Yeah, but the problem is you can't really. Food that is, once it's microwaved, the mice, it looks the same. So even though the tsur of the cooking is probably not so fancy. And I don't think that'll put it in. Anyway, so. A case that's for sure mutter, we mentioned before that if the non-Jew is merely reheating something, that's for sure not said to be Bishul Akum. It was cooked originally by the Jew, whatever shape or form was cooked, now the non-Jew is defrosting it, reheating it, that's for sure not said to be Bishul Akum. That's why we're not really concerned with Bishul Akum, except the planes. So the non-Jewish stewardesses, for argument's sake, I don't know, all the other airlines, and they're throwing in the food into the ovens for you, so that's not a problem, because the food was already cooked long time ago, probably a very, very long time ago. Somebody told me that the average turnover time of airline foods, the food that you're eating in any given flight, was cooked 6 months ago. That's what somebody told me. I have no idea whether they're right or not. I have no idea what this source of that information was, but that's what they said. So I can't argue with it, but it could be true. I don't know. So b'lechor, that's not a problem of Bishul Akum. I had a shayla, actually last week I went to a chasa in London. So I, when I was flying back from London, So the flight left at 9:30 in the morning. So I got on the plane. I hadn't really slept in the night before. So I got back on the plane. The takeoff was 9:30. By 9:20, I was out like a light. So I woke up 3 hours later at 12:30. I was like, I'm hungry. I hadn't eaten in a while. So I woke up at 12:30, and I said, yes, the stewardess, what happened exactly to the kosher food? So she said, you were sleeping. I said, okay, so can I get the food now? So she said to me, no, she's not allowed to give me the food now. I said, why not? She said, because the food already cooled down, she's not allowed to reheat it. So I thought she meant al kashrus. So I was trying to explain to her, no, it's okay, it's not a problem, it's not for shalakam. The whole thing was no. Then she explained to me, no, she said, it's a regulation on the air one, on the oil one, the other one. Once the food was heated up once, and then it was cooled down, to heat it up again, is considered to be a health problem, because they're afraid of bacteria or something in the food. So I said, I didn't want to say it, but I said, you don't think I eat Shabbos leftovers till Thursday? I said, no, we recycle today. And all of a sudden, over the Atlantic, after me, so machmir and health regulations. I said, she didn't, but when we made it shower, she was willing to give me the rest of the pack that was the coal. So it was a delicious meal. I had a challah roll, which, going back to the Pasuk B'Kistin, was hamotzi, even though it said on the thing, it's on the mizanos, it was hamotzi. And I had, there was some salad or something. My wife would have been proud of me on that. There was a brownie. She wouldn't have been so proud of me on that. That I was make with the, and that was it. So I kept me going over until I got home. Anyway.
Yeah. Is there a problem with, if you're in a non-Jewish airline, your oven is,
Well, everything is all covered up and wrapped up in such a way. It's supposed to be in such a way that it's not, it's not really good. So what if something goes wrong and it was Bishalachim? So you goofed. The mice ended up cooked Bishalachim. You cooked Bishalachim. So now what are the ramifications of that? So here the Rosh Hashanah, the big point is whether it trips up Kalim or not. What's the Shaila? On the one hand, it's not kosher. It's both trips up Kalim. So if I cook the Chazer in the pot, I have to cash in the pot. So here some Rosh Hashanah say, no, Bishalachim is not really trait. The reason for Bishalachim is a Gezeira, Bishalachim. The food is not a Misachetza, so to speak, during the long list. Nothing really biblically also about it. But just Bishum Chasnas. So maybe that doesn't carry over to pots and pans and silver. Why? If you could argue, what am I going to exactly, why am I going to marry the guy's daughter? Because the little molecules of food that are inside the walls of his pot are going to be so exciting, so I'm going to marry his daughter. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So some Rishonim say the whole din of Kasher and Kalim doesn't apply. So if you trade stuff, Bishum, not a big deal, things are okay. Another Rishonim say no. The Rishonim say that the reason for the Gzeir was Bishum Chasnas. But the mice, the formulation of the Gzeir was, it's trade. It's trade with the Rabbanon. So then we have to kasher other trade. In the rice, in the Rabbanon, you'd have to kasher up as well here also. So this becomes a very, very tricky question. And a lot of times, guys are shooting off and say they came to the realization that in the last 20 years, there have been a lot of bishalachim going on in the house. Means they have babysitters, mates cooking right and left. There are no pilot lights being turned on, nothing, no microwave, everything's not going to cook right going. So the question is, now what do you do? So it's one thing to come over and tell your parents that, okay, you shouldn't do this from here on in. So, okay, that's half the problem. Sometimes a bit more than half the problem. But it's even more problematic to tell your parents. And by the way, I learned in yeshiva that you just spent $4,000 to 72 for the year. I learned in yeshiva that all the pots and pans and silver, everything has to stray, so we have to start all over again. We have to cash for everything. So it's probably not going to go over that well. So if you tell your parents that, don't tell them I said that, but that's a machlokes rishonim, whether the din is like that or not. So usually when I tell people like this, we try to find pulos here. We try to find a reason why maybe it wasn't bishalachim. So there are some posts we'll start to combine together. Maybe it's strong, about different. Maybe it's a suffix, maybe it's not all shulchan aruch, maybe it was not. We try to find some kind of a kula here. If it's mamish, there's no kula, there's no nothing. It's like a couple people depend. One time a guy mamish traced up one pot, the guy comes and traced up a couple of souls. So we should really cash for them. I think they should cash for it. Whether that means you should go drive your parents nuts and dump to recash an old house because they were relying on, because they weren't careful of Bishalach, and I can't say that. So don't quote me, don't misquote me, don't, I have nothing to say about that topic. Ask your parents rub at home, ask them what guidelines you should do in terms of that. But from here on in, at least Mikan Lahaba, so why don't you try to be careful. The standards of Bishalachim are up to par. One's own home, one should be sure to be careful. In dealing with one's parents, like anything else, you have to be very sensitive, very careful. You have to figure out what is good to make a point. Not relying on other sheets, other coolers, whatever they're relying on. So again, one should try to be careful about the dinner of Bishalachim. So it's something that's important in the restaurants, important in the catering establishments, it's important in our own homes as well. So that's the problem. If she makes it for herself, it's going to trade up the kalim. So it's not a good idea to have her cooking for herself. Something. But the best idea is to look at Jutta and the fire for her. The Jutta and the fire, then she can do whatever she wants. We had once a shout at Bishalach once, had a baby 3 years ago, who she used to eat some plantains, or what the plantains are. It's like giant from bananas. Yeah. You know that everyone, a lot of people from that part of the world like to eat. So she, my wife used to always cook her up these plantains. She would buy them, and she liked them. You can't eat them raw. So it was one time, there was a mix-up. I came home, and I saw they were cooking. I didn't know who turned on the fire. And it was my wife turned it on. She turned it on. So I got all nervous. So it could be they're not Ola Shulchan Balochim. I can't imagine anyone would serve them in a fancy meal, maybe in some parts of the world, but not in Dinek. So I wasn't, they were probably mutter anyway, but so I asked her, oh, are they finished? Are they ready to eat yet? She said, oh, no, not yet. So I said, oh, okay, good. So I took it off the fire, put it back on again. So that's called Bishul Yisrael, since I still helped with the Bishul process. If it would have been totally edible, then it wouldn't help them too late. Well, they weren't fully edible. So the Ramos make, or even the best Machab and Yisrael, you know, they're edible B'Shas Achah, if they're not normally edibles, and that would be considered to be Bishul Yisrael. So, then the Shiloh, assuming I wouldn't have done that, assuming I wouldn't have figured that out, that would have been potentially a Shiloh in terms of Bishul Achah. So we try to avoid the Shiloh, try to be careful with the Shiloh. That's a pas hakam shana, not a bishul hakam shana. Right, the wraps are on pas. So the question is, it's mutter mikradin anyway. So there are some who suggest that maybe toasty would be good enough. I think pas is not that way. Nah, I don't even think for pasta. I mean, I don't even think it's true for pasta. For regular food, I don't think that would work. If the food is edible the way it is, every normal person eats the way it is, in fact, you make it a little more toasty. That's fine. Okay, anyway, try to give at least a little bit of an overview of the dinner of the shalom.